Welcome to Discover Film. This is the podcast where we talk to filmmakers from the festival circuit. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today I got to talk to Paulina Lugudi. Paulina is one of my favorite filmmakers who I've met on the festival circuit. Besides being an obvious talent, she's also a really pleasant person. The first work of hers I saw was This Is How, a short film she produced, wrote, and starred in. As you'll find out from the interview, she's done a whole lot more since then. Oh, and one warning, we start talking about Cooper in this interview, but we don't introduce Cooper. Cooper Ulrich is her cinematographer, collaborator, and boyfriend. And honestly, when they come to the film festival mixers, they're pretty much the cutest couple there. But I think that's enough setup. Let's talk to Paulina.
So I moved from Vegas. I grew up in Vegas after Australia. So funny story.
Okay.
You want the life story. So lived in Sydney my entire life. My dad gets diagnosed with cancer in 98 or 99. I think 98. It's malignant. Life insurance pays him out. They're like, you're not going to see Christmas. He doesn't tell anyone.
He doesn't tell his family because he wants you guys to enjoy Christmas.
Doesn't tell anyone. Doesn't even tell his best friends. Just all of a sudden stops talking to people. And I was a dancer in Sydney. I grew up as a dancer and I did dance competitions and one of the dance competition people from
Sydney. So
you're
this pretty dancer with an Australian accent and
yeah.
You're in the desert.
And I'm in the
Vegas.
Desert. And yes, but I was quite young, so no one really cared. But this dance competition in Sydney told us about this dance studio in Las Vegas that was one of the best in the country. So I immediately went there and I was back into dance. So dance was really much my saving grace because us moving out to Vegas, leaving our entire, Italian families get together on Sundays. Everyone was in Sydney. We came out here and we had no one. And, you know, new school environment, school's entirely different. The way we spoke was really different. When my mom came back out, it was really hostile. So I was just back. I was just in dance all the time. And it was the best thing.
Right. It was your shelter.
Oh, it was everything. And I was competitive. I mean, I would dance for, by the time I got to high school, I went to performing arts high school in Vegas. I would wake up in the morning and train before school started at 7. So before school started at 7. And then I'd have 5 dance classes at school and then go to studio classes at night for competition. So I'm dancing from 5 to 10 every single day, which was nuts. And then I broke my foot and then the dance community shunned me. And I was like, oh, crap.
Really? Like shunned you? They wouldn't just give you time to heal?
No, because it happened in the middle of a competition season. So it really messed up everything for all the dance groups and everything like that. No one visited me.
Oh, so you hurt their overall chances because they lost?
No, they had to just bring a new person in and to learn the parts. But like, it's not my fault.
No.
Broke my foot. Yeah, I had to get surgery because my foot, I had a bone pop out. I have an extra bone in both my feet.
God, that's horrible.
It was so horrible. And it was really depressing because my whole thing was like, I'm going to be a professional dancer. Like, that's what I want to do. I want to be a choreographer. And
there's choreography jobs in Vegas.
Totally. And I've like dedicated so many years of my life and so much money. And at 17, that all kind of went to the wayside. And dance and I had a very, like, hostile, love-hate, dysfunctional relationship. And then we had a bunch of college, representatives come to the Las Vegas Academy for theater and dance and music and all this stuff. And one of my theater friends was like, you should audition for the theater program. In one of these colleges. So I didn't know anything. And I found like a poem online and like a random monologue and did it and got 8 out of 11 colleges for theater. And Chapman was one of them. And I did the dance one and got into all the dance programs. And I wanted to double major in dance and theater, but Chapman, you can't because both programs are so, intense.
They have that word intensive, right?
Yeah.
It's an intensive program.
There's no way you can do both. And I'm like, okay. I guess I'll do theater because dance annoys me anyway. And I still danced in college, but more of like just on the side. And yeah, then now I am making films.
No, wait a minute.
And here we
are. So you go to Chapman for acting.
I went for acting.
For performance.
Yeah. So I was a theater major and kinesiology minor. And then I graduated Chapman. And like I said before, I was the first one in my family to go to college. So it was kind of like, I could have gone to college for, ceramics and they would have been proud. So graduate, but I've always wanted to be involved in performance. Loved choreography. When I went the dance route, especially in high school, I was able to take choreography classes in the performing arts high school. And that's where I really found my stride. I loved choreographing. And then when I went to college with theater, I loved like the blocking and I liked directing a lot. But I didn't always had a hard time taking a performance or play or something seriously if I didn't like the direction. Like I really just, I could never get that, you know, into it. And so after college, I moved to Los Angeles, like everyone from Chapman does, and got a personal training job. And I was also teaching fitness all through college, too, so that was easy.
Right,
my kinesiology
minor. Yeah.
And I taught some dance classes. And then about 3-4 weeks into moving to L.A., my friend calls me up to say, hey, my old roommate is producing this movie. They need an assistant for one of the actors. Are you available tomorrow? I said, yeah, I'm available. So I show up to set and I'm assisting Andre Royo and I've never been an assistant. He'd never had an assistant. So all we did was just talk about life in his trailer, which was amazing. And I met Cooper.
And he's the guy from The Wire?
From The Wire, yeah. And on Empire. And he's the coolest guy. He's amazing. And
yeah, I heard him interviewed on the What the Fuck podcast.
Mark oh, Maron. Really? Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know
that. Super cool.
He's really cool. And he won Best Actor. I don't know if it was South by Southwest. I think it was 2016 he won Best Actor in a film that he did. He's a great guy.
That's what he was promoting.
Yeah, yeah, he's a great guy.
So you randomly had this great experience on a film set.
Yeah, it was so random. And I was like, oh my God, this is the dream right now. And Brad Beaker, who is one of the main directors for American Horror Story and editor for that show as well. He's an EP with Ryan Murphy. He was the director. So, and then Cooper's dad, Robert Ulrich, one of the top casting directors in LA, he's producing as well. So here I am, like, dropped in this 4 weeks out of college. Like, why did I go to theater school? I just had to come down here.
Well, you had to stay busy. You had to stay busy for 4 years so you can have the right timing to step into that.
Yes, but I feel like Chapman is very much like USC in the sense where it's got an amazing film program, but really you're paying for the alumni.
So you knew to go straight to LA, though, after you graduated.
Yeah, I wanted to. I've always been the kind of person. I mean, even when I was in college, I never went back to Vegas during the summer. I always went to LA for, you know, audition intensives, acting classes, networking events. I always just loved being in, like, the grind of everything and learning as much as I can. So by the time and I was always very good at being on my own. So by the time I left college, it wasn't like a huge adjustment. I just kind of went into working and auditioning and doing what I had to do.
And when was the light bulb moment to actually shift to behind the camera filmmaking? Was it that? Oh, it was Cooper himself, or seeing that project?
No, it was Cooper specifically. So I always knew I wanted to eventually in my life make movies or tell stories. Cause again, with that choreography background, I loved the big picture of things. I also really had a hard time just being a piece of a puzzle if I didn't believe in the puzzle. So,
which is actually a horrible trait in the entertainment business, but go on.
Terrible. I know. I'm constantly struggling. So I knew down the line, like, you know, after all this experience or, you know, who knows when, maybe I'll produce something. And I wasn't
right because you were pursuing acting.
Yeah,
acting
I was, and I honestly never had, like, no one in my family is in the film industry. A lot of my friends were just trying to be actors. No one ever really that I hung out with took initiatives to make their own things and showed how easy and accessible it all was until I met Cooper, who was a cinematography major. He was co-producing this movie, but didn't want to produce. He, you know, wanted to shoot, you know, everything. And so he and I got together and weirdly, like, had all these ideas, and we'd bounce each other, you know, bounce them off each other. And I had this idea for this dance piece I wanted to do, like this kind of, you know, this video, but it wasn't just about the dance, you know, just kind of something a little creative. It was a little bit outside of my comfort zone. It wasn't too crazy. And I said, well, let's just shoot it. So we had like $300 and we shot this thing, which was awesome. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, wait, you mean I had an idea 2 weeks ago? And now this idea it's come to fruition. Like, this is the coolest thing of all time, you know,
yeah.
Just to be able to bring people together that are better people who can bring ideas to life. Because just because I don't know how to use a camera or shoot anything doesn't mean that it can't be done. It just means that someone else who really understands how to collaborate and bring a vision to life. Like, that's just so cool to me.
And he had his own camera?
He didn't at the time. Okay. We ended up getting a camera later after that, but he was a Steadicam operator, so he had his own Steadicam. That's how he paid his way through college.
And which would be great for a dance.
Oh, yes, and he broke his Steadicam on my dance video, but it's fine. He sold it. So he was like, I'm done with it anyway. But it was really cool, and we got great response, and then immediately I was like, but this can be better, and I want to do this, this, and this. So then it led to our short film, Unarmed Forces, which mm-hmm. was a friend of mine. We got together and we loved doing improv together.
Yeah, she's your co-star?
Yeah, we loved doing improv together, and we kind of came up with this funny idea, and a director friend of mine, you know, we got together and just this whole thing happened. And again, it was just so amazed that, like, I mean, it took place in a paintball park, you know, that we rented out in Oxnard for 3 days, and it was so much bigger than I'd ever thought possible, just people, a few friends getting together and being able to do this with a little bit of money. And once I was able to really understand producing and understand how things happened, I was like fully.
Right, so Unarmed Forces was sort of like your film school experience.
It was. It was. I got the ultimate film school experience. Like, so many things went wrong. I had to fix them, and I was fully producing it on my own. And from in between Unarmed Forces and, you know, when Cooper and I first met, I was learning everything I could. You know, I'd go to seminars, conferences. I'd research everything all the time. I'd, you know, talk to other filmmaker friends. All of a sudden, I was just obsessed with filmmaking. And what I was, after Unarmed Forces, what I became the most obsessed with from the filmmaking perspective was people saying, oh, you can't make money in filmmaking. I'm like, why? So then I researched everything about just like the economy of the film market and what people do right and what people do wrong. And I have, I mean, hundreds of pages of notes.
Right, because Unarmed Forces, what year was Unarmed Forces?
2014.
Yeah, so that's when everyone's bemoaning the DVD was dead.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The internet's killed
everything. Exactly. And I'm making a short film, so I'm not looking to sell it. You know, I'm just looking to get my feet wet and, you know, understand how it works. And the director on that and I really hit it off and really collaborated. And I had an understanding of storytelling through film at that point. I just saw how we had an idea. I saw how it was shot and I saw how it got made. And then I said, I have this idea called This Is How. And then that was the second thing that we made.
And This Is How was an idea you'd had for a while?
It was
in after Unarmed Forces?
It was an idea I had for... Actually, I didn't have the idea for the short film for a while. I had written I'd written journals all the time. And I would always have this, like... I mean, these journal entries are always about this, just the struggle of my life. You know, like, everyone has the struggles of their life and they journal about it and they're like, no one's going to read it because it's self-indulgent. And weirdly, one day I'm writing and all of a sudden the autobiographical part of it becomes more of a narrative, more outside of myself, someone else. And then I started just writing and what were my own issues became someone else's issues and, you know, transferred into a more fictional story. And so I was like, maybe I'll just write this little idea that I have. And usually how it works for me is I never think of just the story. I'll think of a scene or, at least more so now because, you know, Cooper and I talk all the time and I've become such a visual person. I usually think of like a shot and where it comes from and a story will be developed off of that. I'm writing something right now that's kind of like that.
And you're sitting on a couch next to a cinematographer.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you go visual...
It's very interesting because we often are very much on the same page, but we struggle sometimes because he'll be like, he'll think of things in such visual terms, and I'm like, but stop, because it needs to be... I hate when people just make things to look cool, you know? I hate that more than anything.
Content versus form. I want a balance.
Yeah, it needs to be a balance. Like, the way it's shot just has to be, you know, a branch from the soul of, you know, what you're telling. So I write this 12-page script. This Is How. And then I had one table read of it, and it became a page and a half.
Right. So there was a lot more talking in the first version.
Yeah. A lot more talking, a lot more scenes. It was a whole thing. And then I realized it's not like the movies that I like, you know, the movies I like. I mean, Shame was a huge inspiration for this movie. I loved Shame. I think Steve McQueen is probably the director that made me realize that dance and filmmaking are so similar. Like, choreography and filmmaking are so similar. Just in his use of, like, negative space and spatial relationships. And because with dance, you're telling a story literally without words. How that, you know, he tells stories often with such minimal dialogue, you know, or very contradictory dialogue.
Yes, and very long sequences.
Very long sequences of silence, yeah. Which with dance, I mean, there was a whole style for a long time when I was a dancer where, you know, dancers would go through this whole thing and then they would just stand still on stage for like 30 seconds. And the audience, you'd feel something so nuts, you know? And I loved that. I thought that was the most powerful thing someone could do. So I've always gravitated towards that type of filmmaking. Right.
So modern, edgy sort of dance, and then modern,
yeah,
just barrier crossing sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. Modern, edgy, but still not, like, for the sake of being modern and edgy, you know?
Yeah, not right.
To make a point.
Well, there you go with your content caring about the artistic
story,
value of it.
The story. And so, yeah, so then this is how I became a page and a half, and I showed it to a director friend of mine, the one from Unarmed Forces, and, you know, he's like, oh, I think this is a pretty cool idea. And then it was just a full-on collaboration between myself, Cooper, and him, and it became 8 shots, the entire film, and a page and a half turned into, what, like 12 minutes or 11 minutes and 30 seconds. And that was an amazing learning experience as well. Just again, of like, yeah, what's possible.
So when it was longer,
yeah,
was it, had you written originally like a play? Was it just a lot of like two people on stage talking?
No.
No.
It was more about, we just got to see more in the world of this girl.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, so other scenes, other locations.
Scenes. And the guy came in at the end, very much at the end, and mostly wasn't in it that much. It was mostly just about her and like her world and us figuring out her deal. And we don't find out about her deal until the end, very similar to This Is How. And then I started watching a lot of short films, and I realized that the short films I like tend to be more of just a snapshot rather than trying to abbreviate
3 acts in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't, And some shorts totally pull it off.
Where were you watching shorts?
Oh, all over the place. I watched a lot on Short of the Week as well. Hmm. And sometimes I'd look up what were winners on certain festivals, and I'd go search, you know, Vimeo, anything. Here. I love finding shorts. I love finding shorts. I love finding features. I mean, I try to... Sometimes I'll just rent features on iTunes that are like little babies, and I don't have time to watch them, so they'll expire. And I'm like, it's okay, because I gave them money. It's fine. I gave that feature money. It's all right.
You're actually the dream consumer.
Yeah, I am. I honestly have this like weird idea that I'm going to have such great consumer karma that one day when I sell something, it's just all going to come around and people are going to do what
Wonderful.
I did for them.
Well, plus being the person who seeks out shorts on Vimeo.
Yeah.
There's so many shorts on Vimeo that people put up there and they're not going to get seen.
They're not.
So this is how I think the last thing you told me about This Is How was that... it went from a page and a half to 12 minutes.
Yes. Because everyone's like, a page and a half, that's technically, it's a page a minute, so it should only be a minute 30.
Well, but I assume the page and a half had a lot of stage direction? Or how detailed did you write, like, the period that, during, while he's in the restroom?
Yeah, no, it's pretty...
Was that just... He goes to the restroom and she sits there and plays with a candle?
Yeah, yeah. And the dialogue that's in it, it's not written. There's only 2 lines ever written.
Mm-hmm.
Which are, was that good for you? And then, oh my God, what does she say?
I don't mind.
Oh yeah, I don't mind. Something like that. Yeah, it was like, I don't mind.
Oh no, it's not.
You didn't
mind.
Have to do that, I don't mind. You didn't have to do that, I don't mind. Those are the only 2 lines written in the short.
There have been debates in that family room,
yeah,
where over your film, because I love to show it to female friends who come over,
yeah,
and they're like, "Why does he leave? Why is he so mad?" I go, "Do you understand how deep I don't mind will cut someone who just had a sexual experience?"
And they were fully clothed. You're like half naked. Yeah. It was a way to reverse the roles of exploitation, and to make it complicated too. You know. So the original 12-page short was really about this, the essence of this woman who, you know, is damaged, and uses that, like, you know, the typical story, because they're damaged, they don't want anyone to get close to them. And I always thought it was really interesting how in often stories, like, men who are really damaged, you know, they couldn't possibly fall in love. I'm so damaged. You know what I mean? So they just use, you know, have one night stands or whatever.
It's not their fault.
It's not their fault. And it's like, oh, you love them. And I'm like, well, the same for women, you know, exact same for women. And I didn't feel like that had really been shown in a way that we decided, you know, in the way that we showed it before. And so I really wanted to highlight that, like, you know, this guy technically could go to his buddies, tell them what happened. They'd be like, high five, you know, that was great. That's so cool that happened to you. But yet he feels used, you know, and I feel...
Yeah, he feels rejected.
He feels rejected and used.
In spite of what would normally be considered a sexual success.
Exactly. And I thought that was really interesting to... Because it added such another layer to just this girl who, it's not coming from a malicious place. It's just coming from this place of she wanted it to be something where it was on the same level and equal and consensual, but she just gets too scared at the last minute and just falls back to a habit, you know, of what's comfortable. You know, this is something that is comfortable for her.
And that's in your original draft. That's what you were after?
In the original draft, that's what I was after. And that was told through many more pages and different scenarios.
But you really wanted to hone in on, like,
really
an injured soul.
Yeah, yeah. And how that injury is essentially creating its own cycle of distance. You know, it's that phrase of what helps you survive as a child... essentially becomes your destruction as an adult, you know? And that's something that I've honestly, I mean, that's been the, I guess, mantra for the majority of the films that I've written and made. It's just so much of, like, my own life is that, which I love, because I think a lot of people can relate to it, and I think it's really, people can personalize it in really specific ways. Even though what I'm showing is something kind of extreme. It's a girl who burns herself with cigarettes, even though that does happen. I wanted to show something more extreme and not so common, like, you know, drug addiction or blah, 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 something like that. Or even like an eating disorder, like Holly's Girl. Because I thought having it be something so drastically uncommon, weirdly enough, would make people try and find a way to relate to it.
Yeah. And also visual.
Yeah, and it's very visual.
You were obviously thinking visually.
Yeah, yeah.
It is interesting. It's such an interesting choice you made for her.
Yeah, and because it would be something that's so, you know, exposing. Like, you couldn't not talk about it. You know, if she were to, like, all of a sudden be like, yes, I'm going to have sex with you, and she would take off her clothes and he sees these scars... It'd be like, oh, damn it, we have to stop and talk about this. You know? Should have brought this up at dinner. So,
by the way, if the steak goes well.
Yeah, yeah. Something you should know. But yeah, it was a very risky thing to make, especially too because I'm in it and in a very precarious situation. And so it's not like I could blast it out there and be like, friends, family, look at what I've made. I had to be like, who am I going to
Yeah, you probably get this, but Lord knows, after seeing the film.
I know, my parents.
And not meeting you. You can imagine, come festival time.
Yeah.
Like, so is the person who walks up on stage for the Q&A going to be like, you know, a folded arm?
I know.
like the Ali Sheedy character in Breakfast Club?
Yes, yes. That's so funny. Yeah. And also, too, because like...
But you actually are an artist, so it's not autobiographical.
No, it's not. And also, it's been interesting, too, because like, because Cooper shot it, you know, so we'll both go... How was this scenario on set? It's like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah, this was not your first date.
No. Like, of course, this is going to be, like, the first, like, you know, real... Unarmed Forces was a real film, obviously, but it's comedic, and it's something that... It's a great way to get your feet wet, but to make something that is very risky in a lot of ways. One, because I'm in and I'm exposing myself in a very interesting way, but for me, it feels... actually, filmmaking, writing the story, being the person behind it is way more vulnerable to me than being in it, which is why I think I've gravitated towards being more behind than in front now, unless it feels right, but so far it's just been nice.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Not that, although I was going to kind of focus the podcast on This Is How.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they all mesh.
I'm actually a huge fan of This Is How.
Oh, thank you. We'll get into it.
And Holly's Girl is like... in 2 months at Sherman Oaks Film Festival, so I kind of want to talk to you about that one after that.
No, but we will, but we will. And I won't talk about Holly's Girl. We'll just keep randomly mentioning it.
So I don't see why I'm being strict about it.
Well, no, I should talk about This Is How. It was a fun film, but being in This Is How really made me realize how much I love just the making of things. And because at Armed Forces, I was in Unarmed Forces as well.
Yeah.
And really making a conscious decision to say, you know, I don't think I want to actually be in everything I do and write stuff just for me. I want to be able to have the freedom to write stories for everyone and everything that I
think you're still interested in acting.
Still interested in acting if it fits. Right. My love is telling stories and like visual stories. I love that.
And did you consider directing This Is How or you weren't ready yet?
Yes. I was in a way, so we technically kind of co-directed.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, we technically kind of co-directed, especially in post because I was the only one directing in post-production. And every shot was, you know, talked about between us. But Brian was very much, I mean, he was trying to get his directing career going, and he really wanted his.
Oh, was he? Okay. Because I was going to ask, like, did he ever want to turn to you and go, you know what, I'll step back and let you direct, and I'll be like your, just bounce ideas off of me. With me is, you know, you never
know. Well, also, being on set for this, too, it was really important I wasn't going back and forth between behind the camera.
Sure.
It was so intense for the, like, you know, it was the best acting experience because it was, I mean, that whole, I mean, after the dinner scene when we're, that whole thing is shot in one night. And I mean, it just, it was very visceral. And afterwards, oh my God, it was like this overwhelming emotions that came over because it was very real because of how distant it was, if that makes sense at all. It became very, very real to me, even though this situation, and you know, I'm obviously not burned in scars, even though that's like not my life, the circumstances were real enough where I was like, wow, this is super intense. And I felt if I wasn't mature enough as a filmmaker then to be able to turn that switch on and off and to go behind the camera and look at the frame and be objective and then go back into it. Cause it was just so immersive. And right.
You embodied her.
Yeah. And it would have been too hard to turn on and off. And I think it would have really, just jeopardized the final product. Having someone just to be my advocate, and pre-production, to be honest, is where I think films are made anyway. And what happens on set is just, you know, chaos. But it's where pre-production goes out the window.
They're all essential. I mean,
yes.
Just
having done a feature
mistakes at any level.
Yes.
At any stage.
Yeah.
Kill you.
Yeah. Pre-production is entirely important. I mean, the film really, I can honestly say, was made in pre-production and everything that we planned happened, which is a rarity, but was awesome. So that really helps me a lot for future films as well. It's just understanding the importance of pre-production, which I think is often overlooked nowadays in a lot of filmmaking.
Yeah, well, definitely at the independent level.
Very much so. Which is where it matters the most, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would think, like, because we have no money and no time, we should really plan this out. And yet, it doesn't happen.
I once told a young filmmaker, I was like, if anyone on your set says the words, we can fix it in post, fire them.
Yeah. Very much
because
so.
Because that you can't have that attitude on an independent project.
Unless it's something that really, I mean, when we were on set in Kentucky for my feature, we had a thunderstorm happen that I almost had a force majeure the entire shoot. And this was the second to last day of the shoot. And this is for the entire climax of the film, right? So I'm sitting there and there's droplets the size of like buckets pouring down in this Kentucky rain, you know, forest. And we've got lightning happening. I'm like, oh my gosh.
So you've directed a feature now?
Oh, produced, directed, and wrote it. It's in post. We're picture locked and this week.
And you're in it? Not in it?
Not in it. It's a family sci-fi drama.
Really?
Yeah. It stars a 12-year-old girl. So that means I had to shoot anywhere from 8 to 13 scenes a day in 8-hour days. I died.
Really? I'm just so naturally lazy. I'm like, oh, cool, you're limited to 8 hours.
Because of kids, you know, labor laws.
You didn't hire twins?
No. Oh, my gosh. But she was, I mean, the most incredible actor of all time. And we had Josh Hopkins and Charisma Carpenter in it, and they're incredible. But that was, I mean, that's a whole nother scenario. But same mantra for that film too, even though it's a family film, of like what helps us survive as children ends up breaking us down as adults, or ends up causing our own survival techniques can often distance us from people that we love, you know? So that was, it's also, even though it's a family film, like that kind of is an underlying tone in that film as well, which I didn't quite realize until my stepmom read the script and was like, hey, I see a little chain here between your films.
So she, oh, between the films, or could she see where moments of your life inspired?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, the film, that film, and not to get off the track of This Is How, but that film, the script I purchased from another writer, and it's called Mail Order Monster. And I really liked the title. The script was about a young boy whose parents separate and get back together at the end. And I was like, I've kind of seen that before. And I don't really relate to it. So turned it all on its head and made something called Mom for Mail Order Monster. Mm-hmm. And it has more, it's about a young girl whose mom died 3 years ago in a car accident. She was in the car. And so she holds a lot of this guilt of thinking she's responsible, but it's really about her dad bringing a stepmom into the family and the change that comes with blended families. And a lot of family movies, I felt like they often painted the picture of stepmothers being step monsters. And my stepmom to me, I mean, she's my best friend. She's adopting me. So as an adult, which is awesome. It's really cool. Yeah. Oh, I love my stepmom. She's such a great addition to my life, but she came in when I was 13, 14. So at that age where, even though I loved her so much as a person, I hated the change. And it's more about that, how as less change in general, or just any time with kids, they're a lot more emotionally intelligent than we give them credit for, and a lot more emotionally intelligent than we paint the picture of their lives, you know? And so it's about that. It's about a girl letting go of the ghost of her mom's past to let in the love of a stepmom.
Well, there you go.
And there's a monster in it.
You fascinatingly, as a filmmaker, nail subjects that are important to me.
As
a stepfather, I can tell you that most step-parent portrayals in film make me unbelievably angry.
Especially for stepdads, too, because often in dramas, I feel like stepdads are always, I mean, even in TV procedurals, they're painted as, like, the always the first suspect of something's. It's hard to
navigate.
Well,
I think it's
that.
A lazy portrayal people do,
it's
too.
It's a very lazy portrayal.
As if you'd ever marry someone with a child flippantly without, like, really being, I mean, to marry someone with a child, you are, like, signing up to be completely giving to someone who's never going to love you like they love the birth parent.
Very much so.
And yet
it's
you are
going to
work equally hard.
Even harder. Even harder. And finding out what role can you play. Are you the best friend or are you the disciplinary parent? Looking back at the past of everything my stepmom went through, I was like, I feel this movie, the title being Mail Order Monster, but abbreviating Mom, and just, I feel like there's something here where I can do something that relates to my life and kind of spins the wheel differently on the family film genre. So that's what we did this summer. And it's crazy because This Is How it was done in 2016, and now we shot a feature in 2017. It's just so crazy.
So you did three shorts and now a feature in two to three years?
Yeah.
2 years.
Yeah.
And in a way,
I feel like I do nothing, which is so funny, because when you say it like that, I'm like, every day I feel like I'm not doing enough. So, yeah.
Well, and I was going to ask, because I'm getting the impression that Armed Forces was like the experiment, the learning experience. And then the way This Is How turned out, because it turned out so well, was that instructional? Did you say, okay, did you like find an identity as a filmmaker on that you're going to delve into the deep and the personal?
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. I started writing a feature for This Is How, actually. I still have like a draft of like part of a feature. Then Cooper and I were going to come on to this other feature. I was going to line produce it. He was going to shoot it. I ended up losing funding. And my friend had the short for Holly's Girl. And so I kind of helped develop it with her. And I just kind of took it and was like, this is me. I'm going to fully direct this because this is like my story. Like, I love this so much. So, and This Is How gave me the confidence to do that, to be able to make a movie where it's so exposing in so many ways and it's so risky. And I love that so much. And I liked it because I felt like even though it's kind of shocking, it's not shock value for the sake of shock value, but it feels really, for me, it was really honest. And I liked doing that. It's the strangest thing where, I mean, it's kind of like when people who are just have adrenaline junkies, you know what I mean? They just want to jump off cliffs because they love the feeling it gives them. For some reason, for me, just filmmaking, you complete it and you put it out there, and whatever people's opinions are, it's what their opinions are. It's like that feeling of, I'm just going to put it out, and that slight adrenaline rush that you get from that is what I really love. And it's like, I can't, for me, it's like, it's going to be the most cliche thing, but it's kind of like tattoos, which is why I love tattoos so much. It's because I'm such a people pleaser in real life that just making a film or getting something that is semi-permanent, I guess, and you put it out there, and if people don't like it, you can't change it. You know, it's like, that's your voice, and this is who I am, and, you know, deal with it.
Well, I love that. And listening to you, I'm kind of made aware that when you deal with subjects that are complex and adult and, you know, whatever adjectives I could use, it's open for debate.
I wanted to, for that film in particular, and same with This Is How, like, I love anything that can create a conversation, especially about something that's hard to talk about. I found a lot of eating disorder films were so matter of fact and so removed. It's like, unless you had one, you didn't really relate to it. You're like, ugh, gross. You know, or they pinch themselves in the mirror. Like, ah, that's just like a skinny girl problem, or, you know, privileged girl problem or whatever. But with this film, I wanted to show, like, eating disorders are a problem. At the end of the day, they are an abusive relationship, period. So I wanted to create something that would allow families, friends, people who maybe don't have it themselves, maybe know someone, maybe they don't, to find something that they relate to. So just, it's at the end of the day,
right,
who cares about the, you know, what you weigh, the throwing up, the actual symptoms of it? That's regardless. At the end of the day, it's a dysfunctional relationship. They have it with themselves. So people who come from abusive relationships can relate to someone who has an eating disorder. Someone who comes from, you know, an abusive relationship with themselves with alcohol can relate to it, because they get, it's not about what it is. It's about the relationship. It's about that fight, you know.
That's a really interesting
statement. You're both right.
To say that it's an abusive relationship
it
with
is.
Yourself.
It is.
And you're portraying that in two films, really.
Yeah. I was always told I'm my own worst enemy, but people are their worst enemy. I mean, we can be so much crueler to ourselves than we can be to other people. And that is what I find, at least I found with myself, that was a defense mechanism, is like, I mean, my mom was really abusive to me. So for me, I was overly abusive to myself, because it's like, that's my defense mechanism. Like, you can't hurt me as much as I'm going to hurt myself. Like, I'll always one up you, you know?
You also were following your role model.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
My favorite parenting saying is, kids don't listen to a word you say, and they watch everything you do.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you watched yourself being mistreated, and so you joined in on the fun.
It's true. It becomes your normal. And for me, it was like, I was weird. It's weird. I was praised for being like having so much willpower growing up, and like, wow, she's so dedicated. Like, who gets up, you know,
like with the dance stuff.
With the dance. Like, I mean, Black Swan, I was like, even though it's, you know,
you're like, she's not working hard enough.
She's not. I totally get it. I'm like, that's just a normal day as a dancer. You know, I totally understood that. I mean, she was her own worst enemy. I understood that struggle. I thought it portrayed dancers very well. And I thought when I gave up dance, it would go away. And it didn't. And that's really what got me into writing This Is How and Holly's Girl as well, is that, like, I thought dance was the issue, and it wasn't. It was just, I was just such a bully to myself. But more than, I would think more than just a bully, but just really, I was like that wall that was between me and anyone else. And Cooper is like a huge person that helped break down that wall. And so I think that's why he kind of helped me find a vessel to kind of express these things, you know, through filmmaking. The universe conspired all of it.
Yeah, clearly. It's funny because you mentioned Cooper getting behind the wall, so to speak.
Yeah, very much so.
Is my one thought while talking to you about your work, and specifically This Is How, is I think that if his reaction at the end, the character in the film, the guy in the film, if he had said, no, wait, I really... I'm not leaving right now. Right now I want to find out who you are.
What's going on, all that
and
stuff.
And if he could have potentially gotten behind the wall, gotten in with her.
Yeah.
Instead of getting upset, which was perfectly, I defend his reaction.
Yeah.
I'm just saying she's going to go through that. Well, hopefully she can fix it. She can work with herself.
Yeah.
But yeah, someone is going to have to
eventually
show her that they care.
That, and that's essentially like what this whole, the larger film was kind of like about that. But if the feature was eventually about that, and that's a cool thing about shorts too, is like, we don't know if the next day.
Couldn't you just make it a comedy and just have it like, you know.
That's going to be round two. I take all my films and I make them comedies. Yeah, I mean, that's, again, shorts, it's a snapshot. So there, it opens up that conversation of like, you know, did he call her up the next day? Could he? Would he? If I were him, would I do that? If I were her, would I write him and say, I'm sorry I did that? That always happens all the time. You know, especially with just hookup scenarios, people do something that's very uncomfortable, especially, it's so funny the way, and I think Europeans do this well because they just don't have any, like, sexuality to them is just like another day, another thing. They don't have such a taboo relationship to it. But the reason we decide to make it a sexual experience and not something else in This Is How is because of the vulnerability and how people speak. The body language is so exposing, you know? Like when he starts to unbutton her pants and then she, like, she was kind of into it and then all of a sudden she's like, that was the thing.
Right, yeah. You can see where she makes the turn.
Yeah, exactly. And so we wanted to make it something where this is how a lot of people talk sometimes in relationships before they actually start talking. You know, they'll have these experiences where they feel so close, but then when it comes down to them actually saying words, nothing comes out.
And performing that, were you waiting for the moment where you were going to, like, like when he goes for the buttons, that's where I shift the gears.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're shifting gears in a way that most men want the date to end.
Right.
So.
Right. Exactly. And then that's the thing too, is like, playing with that idea of, do most men really want that? Or is that just something that's, you know, is that just,
you know,
something
it looks
that's
really
up?
Great on the internet, but,
right.
But deep
I know. It's like, usually, you know, that, because, I mean, Cooper's a guy, the director's a guy, and we're, you know, I'm a girl who wrote this, and so we're all having this conversation about just our ideas of, you know, male, female roles in spontaneous sexual experiences anyway, and like the misconceptions and the expectations. That led for some really cool conversation.
Yeah, but in the pre-production phase?
Yeah, it really it manipulated a lot of how we shot it, of course. And, you know, how it was acted and what the beats were, you know, what we wanted to happen.
Well, this visual style that I associate with you and with Cooper as a DP, I mean, Is he using, like, a fantastic gaffer? Is he good at lighting?
He uses a different gaffer all the time,
but he
very much has an eye. And he'll say that his strength is more camera than lighting, but everyone will always say no. Cooper, the thing with Cooper, we have very similar philosophies on lighting, and he's very much helped me be able to have that conversation. But he is less light. Just like,
yeah,
I'm,
well,
less dialogue.
You can tell him I've got his back. It's clearly
awesome.
It's clearly more about camera than lighting. It's just some people are so...
He's just got such a good eye for it.
And some people are ignorant. They think if the camera's not moving, it's about the lighting and other things. But the fact is he's doing photography.
At the end of the day, it's, you know, the visual style of This Is How was a way for Cooper and I to really, like, dig into everything, all of our film philosophies and all the films that we love and everything that we, you know, go back and forth on and really put it to the test and take risks. Even just the fact that the whole short's 8 shots, just the fact that we don't do close-ups a lot of the time, especially in those, you know, that wide at the end, most would want to, like, end it in a close-up, and we didn't. And we thought, wow, this is really cool. You know, we're going to stand by this. And then we did some risky filmmaking also with Holly's Girl. And then we're like, okay, it works there. Let's make a risky family film. Let's make a visually, I don't know, independent indie style. Like, you know, at the end of the day, we love to do, we can only do what we love to do, and we can only do the style that we believe in. I couldn't imitate someone else, or I can't imitate a style just because of a genre. You know, we just do what feels right to us and what we like. But it's always story-based, too. You know, it's not just for the sake of our own eyes and our pleasure of what we like.
That was Paulina Lagudi. I have to tell you, I'm really looking forward to seeing the work she does in the future. And I really do hope that she and Cooper collaborate for a long time to come. If you want to watch her short film, This Is How, you can watch it right now at discoverfilm.net. And you should probably know at discoverfilm.net you can watch a lot of great short films, and you can learn about some cool film festivals. You can even learn a little bit about me. All right, thanks for listening.